This is the Skate Podcast on WEEI.com and the Radio.com app.
For the first time in 39 years, the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup.
Talking Bruins in the NHL.
Sure, old-time hockey.
Like it is sure.
Yeah.
With Ken Laird from the Greg Hill Morning Show.
That's evidently what Ken Laird wants you to believe.
And WEEI.com Bruins writer Matt Kalman.
Everything gonna be all right?
Lace him up for some bees talk right now. It's the Skate Pod.
Sunday Skate, I'll give it a B, B plus.
On WEEI.
Holy, this is a big time show.
It is a big time show.
All right, here we go, another edition of the Skate Pod. It's the 14th of November, 2019. Ken Laird and Matt Kalman. And the Skate Pod is now presented by Red River. We welcome Red River back to the Skate Pod, our exclusive sponsor this week. We have a special guest, Jamie McLennan Noodles from TSN, former NHL goaltender for many, many years. Bounced around the minors mostly, but he had a solid NHL backup career.
Some great moments, and the backup goalies are always the best to talk to, so...
He'll be asking him about collapses because of the Bruins Tuesday night. Four-goal collapse. Historic crumble at the Garden. Did you see this coming? I went to bed, quite frankly, when it was 4-0. I cashed it
in. Yeah, if I was home and it wasn't a Bruins game, I would have turned it off 4-0, as my son well knows, because I did that last week to another game, too. The NHL, you guess you can't turn it off anymore, but did I see it coming?
Three of those? Three four-goal comebacks in the NHL already this year.
Yeah, exactly. It's unbelievable. And, you know, Blame whatever you want to blame, but holy, you know, they keep stopping playing, and so.
Well, I want to go through who's to blame, but first, just a quick reminder, you can download us on iTunes, of course, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Radio.com is rocking and rolling in terms of the Skate Pod, and give us a good review if you can. We appreciate those. Keep coming in. Now, we had Don Cherry on the show a couple weeks ago. We addressed this on my show in the morning, the Greg Hill Show, a couple days ago, and maybe we'll get to it at the back end of this podcast as well, but... Glad we got Don when we did.
Yeah, that's right.
He went out with a bang of some sorts, however you want to describe that, and he has been relieved of his duties. More on that a little bit later in the program. All right, first, what happened? I mean, what's the biggest culprit for blowing a 4-0 lead to the Florida Panthers?
It's the National Hockey League. It's hockey of any level, and you have to blame the goalie, right? First off, I mean, holy cow, those first two goals, and especially the second one, the Hoffman goal, by now people are... Hopefully, have drank themselves away from it and forgot what it's going on. But I mean, the Hoffman goal is terrible. I mean, how it gets through the short side there, nobody knows. And then the rest of the team—they just—they didn't go for the jugular. You know, they should have had 6 or 7 last night. I mean, Montembeau made some great saves, but they let him off the hook time and again. And then after they blew the game, you know, or actually it was 4-3 when Coyle open lane to the goal open. In the slot, and he passes. And that was just the most egregious of the 4 or 5 times that happened earlier in the game, even when they weren't blowing the lead. This is a thing this team has, and it's funny. We talked to Cam Neely about Pasternak and Heinen, and he brought up this thing about being selfish by passing. I mean, shoot the damn puck, guys.
McAvoy in overtime.
Oh, my God. These guys are unbelievable why they won't shoot. It's like we know that their strength, they always say, is our chemistry, our camaraderie. We love each other. We're family. And it's like it's seeping over. They just want to be generous and give out Christmas presents to everybody. But go out there and steal something and take a shot.
Well, McAvoy is the most troubling to me. I mean, it was like he is afraid to shoot.
Right.
It is something mental there.
Yeah,
it's
unbelievable. You know, he tried telling me that, you know, a lot of times that the shot's not there, but you can't be out there as much as he is and not be able to find the seams. And, you know, this is going to be part of the growing process. He's not going to be Drew Doughty overnight, I guess. And we'll see how it develops. But it also puts them in a tough position here because Torrey Krug's out now, and we don't know what Torrey Krug's future is beyond this year. And this is the guy that's supposed to, you know, pick up a lot of that slack as far as the offense, 5-on-5 and power play.
Not to mention Matt Grizzlick was the choice to lead the power play in Krug's absence, right?
Yeah,
is that
absolutely
eye-opening to you?
Not eye-opening because they, at this stage of the season, they don't want to start reinventing everything, and it works best with a left shot who can move the puck. And, you know, Grizzly clearly not as dynamic, and we saw some of that. There was some staleness maybe to the power play last night, but you got to shoot the puck. It's like it's just so basic and so, you know, but
they gave up 4. They gave up 4.
Right.
Forget about offensive
passing
shots.
Well, that goes back to the goaltending, and, you know.
I really blame Tuukka for only one of them.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, first of all, 2 of them were on the power play.
Right.
So the refs are a little bit I didn't think those were egregious hand
violations. I'm so used to terrible officiating in the National Hockey League that you just have to play through it. It's just like bad ice or being on the road or tough travel schedule. It's just comes with the territory now. you know, they lost that Coyle goal in Montreal. So ever after that, you know, does anything shock you?
The fourth goal to tie it, Cassidy actually referenced this, but
yeah.
I mean, they bailed defensively in front. The wingers, he said, he wouldn't say Pasternak's name, but
yeah,
it was Pasternak.
Yeah.
Pasternak comes in and just does a flyby.
Right.
Well, rebound it, and you got Yandle dropping down low, and he buries it. So that is concerning with Pasternak. I wonder if it's going to his head a little bit here. I mean, obviously,
well, you know what? You know what? Success. Okay, you're going to bring this up? This is my issue right now with him. He's averaging only like 19 and a half minutes a game, which is a career high, but it's only maybe a minute more than last year. But the last four or five games, when I've looked at the sheets after, he's up 22, 23 minutes. He's the one double shifting when Richie's out and they only dress 11D. He's double shifting last night, you know, after a penalty kill. Are we running this guy into the ground? I mean, yeah, he's 23 and should be able to handle it, but it's only November. And like you said, a mental mistake like that creeps in. The shootouts, he's afraid to even use him in the shootout because he was so ineffective in the Philly game. Are we running this guy down for no reason?
Oh, interesting. Well, if that's the case, then you're putting some of this on Cassidy, which I know
right.
many people were, first of all, with his shootout selections.
Yeah.
Now, you know, he goes with – what I don't understand is Bergeron. Where's he been?
Because he's pretty terrible at this, too. I mean,
he's a 25% career guy. He has not gone this year.
He started – this is not official stats, but my recollection is when the shootout started, he got a couple – he had been good in the AHL and got a couple early. Then he went through a long slump where he wasn't getting it. He changed his approach. He got hot again, and then I think he cooled off. It's just
so he's been cold
so
last
maybe,
year.
So maybe you do have to just go. I mean, he was always the leadoff guy for so many
right.
times, and now he doesn't even get in there.
Like Coyle, I understand. McAvoy, I understand.
Obviously. Well, Coyle, I don't understand, even though his percentage is great. I mean, a guy that doesn't like to shoot, and you use him in the shootout.
Well, but that doesn't matter. I mean, it's totally different. It's not like it's not a game
yeah.
action. It's a different situation. He's been a good shootout guy. You know, yeah. decent. And obviously, he scored last night. He was the only guy that scored.
Right.
Tuesday, as we talk about this on Thursday. But, you know, Wagner, I don't get. Now, Wagner's like a dynamo
well,
in terms
well,
of practice.
Well, because Wagner's, he's scored a couple of his goals kind of Sean Thornton style, you know, dangling and getting the little deke in the five-hole move. But then he didn't use that last night, so what's the point?
Like, sometimes you're thinking too much.
Right, exactly.
Like Patrice well, Bergeron or Chris Wagner.
Well, here's the number one thing with the shootout from the whole league. You have a lot of speed. You're a National Hockey League player. You don't want to think. Use your speed. These guys that slow around and take the Jack Edwards, quote, serpentine route,
well,
don't do it.
Florida, though. A couple of their goals were
well,
like
sometimes
that.
It works. But you know what? Well, that goes back to Tuukka not being very effective in the shootout.
Yep.
He hates it. Let's face it. You know, he said, what is it? You're either the hero or the asshole. So, I mean, you can't. That's like the motto. They should say that before every shootout. The PA guy should come on and go, here we go to the shootout, where you're either the hero or the asshole.
I've seen on Twitter some blame for Cassidy not calling a timeout after the second goal to try to stem the tide.
Those are such nitpicky things. I'm worried more about, you know, 11 forwards dressing for the game and juggling the lines like that, you know, or not keeping... Should have just kept three lines together at least, you know. But that game, they were so out of sync. That was a Detroit game, right?
Yeah, with Camford dressed.
They're trying to dress. They're using different centers with Corrali on the wing and Wagner, and then they're putting wings with those two guys. It was just such a. Have we not learned about this team? They do their best when it's just consistent lines, even if you're shortening your bench. Just have consistent lines, have consistent personnel. So you know, that was a situation. And again, I'm not too fond of this Pasternak. Ice time situation. I wonder if it'll become an issue at some point here. And there are things here and there. And now we'll really see what he can pull out of a hat. If I mean, a four game losing streak going into a back to back with Toronto and Washington. Even if you win one of those, you know that's five out of six on the loss column. That's actual adversity. I mean, you talk about adversity from injuries, whatever they've had. They've never had a real adverse situation like this. Three times they've lost four in a row under Cassidy, and one of those was the four straight to Tampa in the playoffs. So,
and danger of it getting worse if, you know, Toronto and Washington, there's not easy games
right
coming up this weekend. Yeah, I mean, they were 11-1-2. They're now 0-2-2. They had the Pittsburgh game, which they almost blew.
Right, and you can't look at that as a model game. So.
The Montreal game was, you know, dominated by the offsides play. But still,
yeah.
they lost the game.
Right. I mean, there the goalie said the puck looked like a golf ball. So.
Right. Then Friday in Detroit, they lose 4-2. You know, and you stirred the waters by writing that Torey Krug was going to be a Detroit Red Wing by like noon on Wednesday. So,
exactly.
God, the venom that you got for that was unbelievable.
Well, all I did was use the word upset, and people were very offended that I said that the last place Red Wings beat the first place Bruins, and it was an upset. I didn't know that was such a harsh word. I didn't know that was a trigger word for some of the Twitter followers here.
What happened in Detroit? I mean, the Wings were on a four-game skid. Now, I think they've won three in a row. They're actually back.
Yeah,
they're somewhat
they beat Vegas the next night, so you just never know. But, the penalty kill let them down there, just like it did last night.
Cross, between the circles, passing on the penalty kill. Stuff that never would have happened.
And that's where Vetrano scored last night, too.
True,
so,
good point.
They found a soft spot in this penalty kill, which is definitely not reflective of the, we can bring up the seven forwards that are out now of the lineup injured.
Yep. True.
But, that's none of them are super penalty killers. Jake DeBrus doesn't penalty kill too often. Carson was just starting to break in there. So that shouldn't really be the issue at this point. They should really have this structure down. And I think, I referenced it in my story on Wednesday morning, and I think I've brought it up here. 2011, they started 3-7. They went undefeated in November. It's just, it catches up to you at some point, and then after the unbeaten in 11, they kind of went into a back and forth, 500 hockey mediocre kind of team for a while. It's just it has to catch up to you.
Yeah.
And you know what? Watching St. Louis play, I think part of their solution, and I'm not saying they're not going to hit the wall too at some point here. Maybe some people would even say they did when they started off a little slower. They added Justin Falk, who played almost as long last year. Right, went to the conference finals, although maybe he didn't break a sweat in that four-game sweep. They look a little energized. They've added a little, blood, a little fresh blood to there. And I think maybe just being a different place energized him. And, at some point, maybe you have to do something. But clearly, being up against the cap, having seven guys out, it's hard right now.
The Philly loss, the first two periods were brutal. Salvaged the point with a third period where Heinen gets lucky on a goal, really, in Marchand. With a great snipe, classic Marchand snipe to tie the game, but not a great performance, not a back to back. They had an off day between,
concerning. That's where this hangover thing is going to come in. It's coming in now. That the schedule's picking up. They went they had 3-day breaks like 2 weeks in a row before that, right? So they were fresher.
Yeah,
and now you're in the more one game every day, other day, one game with just 2-day break, and that's when it starts to take its toll.
Interesting division, too. I mean, I know you were kind of mocking Florida and Bobrovsky, but they're, that's kind of a win that could put a team on a run.
Like I said,
Detroit lost it.
Like I wrote, it was the greatest moment in Florida Panthers history since somebody hit Patrick Aguirre in the head with a rat. So, I mean, great. 23 years later, you got another great moment in your history. So we'll see. I mean,
it shows character. Shows Quenneville is, on top of that team.
Yeah, I mean, you got to give them credit for not rolling over the way the Sharks did when they came into town, right?
Right.
So the Sharks
are
the total opposite. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see how that goes. I mean, we know Buffalo's,
Buffalo gets swept in Sweden, so they're
I didn't get into the whole, Bruins are. Not only do the Bruins have a lot of time, clearly, it's only November, but the division isn't as, right now, Buffalo's showing it's a fraud again. Tampa's trying to get together. We don't know what's going to happen when they come back from Sweden. Toronto is Toronto, a firestorm. It's almost like they're playing a game of chicken with Babcock now. Almost like they want him to quit rather than fire him. It's like a Costanza thing. I don't know what's going on. I mean, don't you think that if they fired Babcock now, they would get a spark that would really get them going? It might not be the right decision for the long term, but at this point, they have to do something to light a fire onto this team.
Actually, you're sort of right. I can't say that I know Babcock and compare him to like a hard nut coach. But he's a tough guy. He's demanding, right? You bring in a guy that loosens the reins a little bit, maybe that would have an impact on that team. But then again, their problem is D.
I think they would just play more relaxed.
Maybe.
I think we know how the pressure cooker is there, and I don't know what they'd have as a replacement, whether they'd bring up the AHL coach or bump up an assistant. They have Dave Hackstall, the former Flyers coach there. He's not exactly Mr. Magnetic personality. I don't know how that would fly in Toronto, but you would think that they have to do something there, and I guess maybe they could just keep using the injuries as an excuse. They went from Tavares being out to now Marner's out, so they can use that as an excuse, but, they're going to get behind at this rate. And so, the division has given them their fast start and the division not really being as competitive at this point as
Boston,
bought the Bruins some time here. So,
a 3-point cushion as we record here today for first place. All right, let's get to our guest. And by the way, all that Leafs talk, Plus, our next guest is has a talk show in Toronto. You're going to be accused again of just being
God.
A Toronto podcast.
Exactly.
So hopefully we'll get too far.
How do our listeners not love the soap opera of Toronto, regardless of where they live? And we talk plenty of Bruins. I mean, geez, you got to have a diversion now and then.
All right, special guest this week, Jamie McLennan. He hosts weekdays 4 to 7 at TSN 1050 in Toronto. You know him from TSN and, of course, NHL Network and NBC over the years, and former NHL goalie himself for many, many years. Jamie, we were just talking about the Bruins' collapse on Tuesday night. 4 goals in the third period. What was the worst collapse of your hockey career? Do you remember it?
Too many to go into the detail. I'll be honest, I had a crazy game in Washington one night. I was with the Calgary Flames, and I was playing against Olaf Kolzig, was on the other side. And with 5 minutes left, the score was 0-0, and both of us were actually having pretty good games. The game ended up 3-3. I don't know what happened. I mean, I do know what happened. Jerome McGinley took control of the game, and then Jamie McLennan melted and couldn't hold the lead 3 separate times. And to the fact that, I mean, I think with a half a second left, Jaromír Jágr scored from behind the net off the back of my leg.
Oh,
and
God.
At that point, I was like, all right, get me the hell out of here. So it was one of those ones that still haunts me to this day, where I think I cost our team at least a point, maybe more that night. But there are several over my career where you're like, man, if you just had a save. I also had a night in Toronto one night in the Old Garden. I was playing for St. Louis, and we won 6-4, and they still had I don't know if you remember the rule where even if you had a skate lace in the crease, it would be a no goal. And they had 2 goals called back, and we ended up winning the game 6-4. And Mark Bergevin said to me afterwards, he said, you did your best, but we still won. So it was one of those nights. So, yeah, believe me, I've been there before several times. And, you know, it's one of those ones. I watched the game last night, and, you know, I Tuukka's a pretty laid-back guy, and I love him as a goaltender. But it's just it's a battle, but I'm still a huge fan of where the Bruins are as an organization and the way they've played. They're a fantastic team.
Yeah, you know, it seems like with Tuukka, though, he goes through these stretches, and I guess every goalie has slumps, but it tends to really get out of control. Considering where he usually is typically, and you know, maybe where and he's at his best in the playoffs, it seems like when he's bad, it just gets really bad. I mean, would you agree with that?
Yeah, you're right. It goes through stretches. And here's the one thing I'll always say from somebody outside of Boston is, you know, like, I think Tuukka's a fantastic goaltender. And the challenge with him is that, you know, he's been in that market for so long. So it's kind of all you know right now. Like, if you look at any organization, they would die to have him. But ultimately, you're right. You, when you watch somebody so much night in and night out, you do notice the ups and downs. And Tuukka does have those stretches. But you're right. A lot of goaltenders do. It's just more of a battle than, you know, it's how you come out of them and how quickly the team can help you come out.
So how does this affect the team, Jamie, when they blow a 4-goal lead? I mean, overall, they're still in pretty good shape. They had an unbelievable start, 11-1-2, but we've been worried, you know, Bruins fans, about like a cup hangover. Is this it? Is this kind of what you're seeing, the danger of a long season the year before?
Yes, and let's not forget, they're a pretty banged-up team. You saw another injury last night. So, you know, I'm not going to absolve any team because of injuries, because everyone's going through it, but some nights it does catch up to you. The one thing I never worry about when it comes to the Bruins is the leadership group and the amount of guys that they have that can dominate any time, because that top line is still fantastic. Chara is arguably one of the greatest leaders of all time in all pro sports. So, you know, I don't think it would affect the psyche of the group that much. I think more they would be pissed off about it and frustrated, because you're you know, you left a point on the table when clearly you were in control of the game. So it's not that it's a learning curve, but it's one of those ones where you're like, all right, boys, let's knuckle down here. We're better than that.
You know, along the same lines, too, my smallest, tiniest little issue with Bruce Cassidy these last 2 years is just, I think sometimes he defers too much to that leadership group. And
yep.
And we haven't really seen him now. This is only the third 4-game losing streak since he took over in 2017. And so I wonder, you know, how he's going to respond if this were to go a couple more games here and just, you know, what would you expect out of a coach in a situation like this? Obviously, you use that leadership group, but what would you hope he does to kind of get them out of this?
Well, I think the biggest thing sometimes, you have to pick your spots. I've had some amazing coaches throughout my career, Joel Quenneville and Al Arbor and Jacques Lemaire and Daryl Sutter. If you continue to bang the same drum, the guys tune you out. So if you have a great temperament, like Joel Quenneville was a prime example of that, you allow the leadership group to sort it out. And when they're not sorting it out or you don't like what you're seeing, that's when you come in and you have maybe one garbage can kicker and kind of hold a couple guys' feet to the fire. Nowadays, guys make so much money and it's more, as much as a team game, every guy's their own little brand within the room. So the one thing that you can only hold over players' head is ice time and accountability. So, you know, if you don't like what you're seeing from certain players, if they're cheating or taking the short way out, then you hold their feet to the fire a little bit. But like I say, it falls on deaf ears if you do it too much. So I think I don't know how Bruce handles the day-to-day stuff, but there will be, I'm sure at some point, have to be a little bit of a meltdown, the old major league where you throw all the bats in the shower or you do whatever you need to do. But, right. You know, ultimately, the guys, I think they're such a good team, they'll be able to sort it out.
One weakness of the team we're seeing, or it's early, but they're 0-3 in shootouts, Jamie, and Pasternak in particular is not a real good breakaway guy. He got stopped on a penalty shot against Philly Sunday, and then in the shootout, they didn't even use him on Tuesday. They've kind of benched him. He's like a 15% career shootout guy. But what do you see with him in his game in terms of breakaways? And I'm not sure you've broken down his stuff, but like as a goalie, what do you see in terms of the ability to score on a breakaway?
Well, the biggest thing for Pasternak, like when to me shootouts are they're hit or miss,
because
sometimes guys, they need the pressure of somebody chasing them. They need they need something where in their mind there's that you've got to be quick about it. In the shootouts, everything's slow and methodical, and you can think it and you can overthink it, and the goalie can psych you out. So I think they have to practice it in practice, and a lot of times you'll see coaches go off the board. It's like, nah, the sixth defenseman is second to shoot, because in practice, that's the guy who scores every time. So you do see things as far as thought processes outside the box. Pasternak's a fantastic player. I never worry about him, but he is going to have to switch something up. And a lot of times you're looking to Deke. He may just have to come in and just shoot. Claude Giroux the other day in a shootout against the Leafs. He took a slap shot.
Yep.
Sometimes it may just be something simple like, close your eyes and fire away, because you've got a bomb for a shot. So that's what I'm looking at when it comes to the skills competition. I got to be honest, I hate it, but I was 0-2 in shootouts and both of them went into extra extra shooters.
Right.
But I'm biased because I hate it.
Yeah, I mean, since the invention of the shootout, I always wondered why they don't just use Chara to go up there and just blast away. I can't imagine a goalie getting in front of that.
No, it's ridiculous.
Well, you're up there in Toronto. I mean, has the week been dominated by Don Cherry, or are you talking Leafs? What's going on in your talk show?
A little bit of both, to be honest. I mean, the Cherry situation is unfortunate for everyone. And I thought Paul Maurice handled it the best. He said, overall, it's just sad.
Mm-hmm.
Because he said, you're sad for the words, you're sad for the reaction, you're sad for, an icon that people grew up watching every Saturday night, and you don't want to see anybody go out that way. But ultimately, the world is changing. You have to be responsible. I mean, we all talk for a living. You have to be responsible for what comes out of your mouth. And to me, I thought Paul Maurice nailed it when I watched his media yesterday, saying, it's sad for the people that took offense to it, because, hockey, you want everyone to be included. You don't want any type of racist or any type of comments to come out. And to me, I think that's true. We're trying to grow as a world and grow as especially in hockey. I think hockey's trying to grow and get away from what people stereotypically think players are like and stuff. And I think we've seen a lot of progress. And ultimately, You know, Don has to be responsible for his words, as I do, as you guys do, as everyone, right? So, you know, it's unfortunate, but yeah, there are a lot of people talking about it right now, and then obviously the Leafs injuries with Mitch Marner, the high ankle sprain, and they've had injuries and inconsistencies, so it's a big problem there.
Yes, as we're talking now, this will post tomorrow, so the Leafs will have played the Islanders, but just how have they responded up till now to the Marner injury, and how long do you think they can sustain, you know, or get out of maybe their slump with that without him?
Well, they lost John Tavares for 7 games,
right?
So, you know, they've been able to fight through. I worry about their defensive zone structure. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been 5 years we've been talking about right. And to me, that's something that the Bruins were able to expose when they got deeper into the playoffs. Now, I know it went to Game 7, and honestly, like, you know, those teams match up pretty well as far as some skill and the goaltenders and all of that. But, you know, I look at the Bruins' structure when they're on their game. And, you know, on nights, to me, structure protects players when they're not having the best night, either mentally or physically. And the Leafs... When they're tired and they're not on, they get exposed. And to me, that's something of the details of the game that have to get sorted out. So, you know, it's still a work in progress in Toronto. But as you know, it's quite a noisy fan base and media base up here. So
right.
Nothing ever short to talk about up here, put it that way.
And along those same lines, what about the goaltending situation? I mean, what are your thoughts on Freddie Anderson? But I think also just the workload that he continues to have to handle with them not finding a sufficient backup.
Well, to me, they've painted themselves in a corner because they're up against the cap, so
yeah.
They've got a spot for a backup for $700,000, where, you know, people get frustrated when they think of the Bruins and they go, oh, David Pastrnak makes $6.75 million, and he's a $12 million player, you know, and Brad Marchand makes $6.3 million, and he's a $10 million player. Like, you know, and I know those contracts were signed years ago and it's percentage of the cap and all that, but, you know, people don't take kindly to looking at salaries and going, you know, and doing that comparison. And then you look at a guy like Jaro Halak. Yeah, he makes $2.75 million, but he's worth every cent of
right.
it because, you know, they have a platoon system, and now Rask can rest and go
right.
deep into the playoffs. And to me, they don't have the luxury here. Freddie's been taxed. He's had to play 60-plus games. They had stable backup in Curtis McIlhenny, but he was 35 years old, and they moved away from him, and they haven't had stability since. So it's been a struggle there. And like I say, they can't even go out and get a guy like Louis Domingue, who won 21 games last year and was available out of Tampa on waivers because they didn't have the room on the cap. So
right.
I think that's a source of frustration for a lot of people up here as well.
Well, last one for me, Jamie. We've had every podcast guest we've had on, we've asked about Torrey Krug and whether he's worth $8 million. So we'll ask you the same. What's he going to make? Is he a franchise defenseman?
I love him. I know. It's funny because I follow everyone in Boston on Twitter and you know, and see the comments. And he's one of those guys, it's almost like in politics, you're either on the left or the right when you come to Torrey Krug, which I'm a big fan. I love the player. He's got jam. He can skate. He's got a bomb for a shot. Does he turn the puck over and have some warts in his game? Well, the next perfect player will be the only perfect player. I'll tell you that because I guarantee you there's 30 other organizations that would love to have him. Price point, I get it. That's where, you know, he may have to take the Boston dollar discount to fit into the structure of what everyone does there in Boston. But I'm a big Krug fan, so I don't know where you guys fall, but I think he's a guy who, you know, he brings it and he competes, and he's not a big body, but he's got jam. And to me, he's everything of what the NHL is as far as, you know, today's game. He doesn't have to fight, even though he will, but he plays hard. And to me, he's somebody that I would love to have on my team. You know, is $8 million or whatever rich for any player? Absolutely. You know, you're always going to overpay and question the contract, but you know, that's a, put it this way, envision your team without him
right.
and see where you're at.
Exactly.
That's what I always do, because when we start just talking about flat dollars, people can get frustrated chasing their tail because there's always going to be a year where you're like, you're paying $8 million for that, or you're paying $8 million for this. You know, it's frustrating, but ultimately, I'm a big Krug fan. That's my long answer for a short question.
Well, we appreciate you coming on. We had Cherry on the show about a month ago, so be careful, all right? We don't want to be kind of like a Jinx podcast or something. Watch yourself
out
there.
I know. Like I say, it is what it is. But, unfortunately, I hope that doesn't tarnish his legacy too much. But, again, you have to own your words, and he kind of doubled down. So it's unfortunate.
Thank you, Jamie.
Yeah,
appreciate
thanks a lot,
your time.
Jamie.
All right, thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks a lot. Really appreciate you doing it.
You bet. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
There you go. Thanks to Noodles for the visit here on the Skate Pod. We're going through the Canadian media members one at a time. We'll get them all fired.
We're just the ones that I have beers with after the Game 7 of the 2011 Finals. I don't think he probably doesn't remember that, but after I finally got off work that night in Vancouver and got back to the hotel via the shuttle through, the war zone that Vancouver became because they lost a hockey game.
The rioting.
Threw back a beer with Jamie McClendon and Aaron Ward, so that was good.
Good guys.
Exactly.
Let's talk Don Cherry for a minute or two.
Yeah, there's not much more time you can spend to it.
Former guest on it. What's your take on it?
I pretty much agree with Jamie McClendon. I mean, I just don't get why he wouldn't just apologize. I mean, they're saying now, I guess he's claiming now they wouldn't allow him to apologize.
In a follow-up interview, he said he was willing to apologize, but it was not good enough for them. But then he hinted that they wanted him to do something else that he refused to do.
Yeah.
And I further heard him say, I'm not going to do that. Like, he apologizes and then he doesn't. Then he doubles down and gets it worse. He had a reference to Mississauga that I saw, which is a heavily minority-lived area.
Yeah.
So that was not a good reference either. So, I mean,
here's my thing.
Look, the guy's 85. He's a legend.
How much has been written in the last 2 days about his history of doing these things?
Yes,
that he got away with.
Mostly European bias, nothing so overt.
I don't know what you were getting where you live, but I never got Hockey Night in Canada in New York. Don Cherry to me was a guy in a magazine. He would pop up in the Hockey News once in a while. He would pop up in Goal Magazine or Hockey Illustrated, whatever. I didn't quite understand him. We didn't have the videos even. I kind of knew references to him here and there.
It became a guy that during the playoffs he would pop up more because the games, you would see what he'd said about a big game.
Exactly.
And it was more of a national feel.
And so, but I do kind of remember him calling out the Francophone players for being wusses, even claiming Mario Lemieux wasn't tough because he had a French name. So obviously, if you were doing that now, he would have been gone much longer. He was an equal opportunity offender for sure, but not in a way that like a Howard Stern is or something. This is a guy who's supposed to be serious. But by the same token, where did he rank in that like poll that Canada did like years ago as like the most important Canadian?
We had him on.
The most respected.
I called him the greatest Canadian. We had him on.
So I don't understand how Canada's relationship with him is. It doesn't make sense to me. He's been doing these things for 35 years, and yet they hold him in such high regard. He's an institution. So clearly, I don't understand the Canadian psyche.
Yeah.
And that this was a bridge too far probably has more to do with new management at Rogers than anything else. And also our social media and the fact that more people caught on. I mean more people of different colors and different genders have written so much about how much they do hate him. It's like almost like they've been silenced in the way people that have other people have been silenced over the years just because he's been too strong to stand up to. So I mean, obviously the right thing happened here, and it's. I don't even want to say it's a shame because if he was so despicable, why was he on the air all this time? So
it's a complicated issue.
Exactly.
Because he is beloved.
Well, that's just it.
I don't want people keep saying this cancel culture. That's not what I want.
Right.
And he's got his right to his opinions, but he's representing Sportsnet, so
sure.
You can't be surprised by their reaction, especially if you refuse to apologize and address it.
And so that goes back to what I'm saying. It's like Canada, you think of Canada as open, loving, everybody's friendly. It's like they say it's the most diverse country in the world. So why did they hold up this icon of bigotry and xenophobia as a role model for 35 years? It's such a contradiction. I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think of him like that, though. When I think of Don Cherry from the good side of it, you think of somebody who obviously knew the game, and he would pick stuff out that was interesting.
Right.
Obviously, he was like caveman in terms of the physicality.
Right.
How many times when he was on with us did he mention he go into
right? I have no problem with the fighting, but there was always
there was an anti Ovechkin, there was an anti European.
Exactly. I mean, I guess somebody, I don't know if this is true, but I saw this on Twitter, so it had to be true, right? somebody tweeted out like the 3 years he owned some OHL team and refused to sign any European players.
Yeah.
They won like 25 games in 3 years.
Yeah.
So that's what it comes back to. Is like, if, why is this worse than that? As opposed to, but not saying that he should, that it should continue to get away with it. It's just interesting to see when the last straw came.
Right. And it wasn't just you people, because that's what Don Cherry kept saying. If I had said everybody instead of you people, well, it was you people, and then it was you come here,
right.
And then it was,
exactly.
It was obviously a reference to immigrants. And, you know, as I said on the Greg Hill Show, I'm married to a Canadian.
Yeah.
She's from Montreal.
Right.
She's Indian.
Right.
Her parents were immigrants. They came in the 70s. Their whole life in, and Montreal, it's even more complex with the, you know, French Canadians and the mix. They were forced to speak the language at a young age, thrown into French immersion schools. That's all they wanted was to learn the culture, become part of it, become, you know, just a Canadian.
Right.
And they are, a lot of them are proud Canadians. They would support the military. And you say stuff like that, if it goes unchecked, it's hurtful. It is divisive to them. And, you know, as a white guy, I don't deal with that stuff. But when you're around people, like, and I'm learning, too, like every year, you realize what an impact it has. They go, you know, it affects the way they live their lives. You go around like looking over your shoulder. Am I accepted? Am I not? Like subtle things. So people just, you know, wow, cancel culture. It's complex.
This is much different than cancel culture. This isn't this isn't something that was misinterpreted or could be seen two ways. This is something that he's saying he actually said. So.
Yes, right. And wouldn't back down from it.
Right.
Really. I mean, and wouldn't even really try. But you know, he's going to be remembered for an unbelievable career, obviously.
Oh, you know what? Actually, I want to get this in. Ron McLean, people blaming Ron McLean.
He blamed Ron McLean.
Give me a break. The guy has to herd cats for 8 minutes every Saturday night, right? You know, he's got somebody talking in his ear.
Yeah.
He's trying to get this, you know, 85-year-old man who can't say like one coherent sentence without getting off topic on topic, so they can get everything in those. Is it even 8 minutes? I think it's like 6 minutes, whatever it is.
Right.
He's trying to wrap it up. We've heard Cherry talk about the veterans and talk about the poppies and all these things leading up to that video that they show of him in the graveyard.
Yep.
How many times do you think Ron McLean has seen and heard that and seen and heard his introduction to that? So he's not expecting some bigoted thing to come out of his mouth at that point in time. He's just trying to get the show over. He's probably not listening.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, we all tune out now and then when we're on any kind of show. And
yeah, I just tuned out what you said.
Exactly. And so enough with the, oh, Ron McLean just sat there. He clearly would have responded. I don't, you know, Ron McLean is the Mr. Rogers of Canada, and get off his back. I mean, really.
Well, he's rode on Don's coattails for many, many years to a significant job. You got to admit that. It's not like Ron is a bomb thrower. I mean, that's.
Well, no, but he's a presenter.
Solid guy.
He's a solid presenter.
Yes. But what Cherry blamed him for was throwing him under the bus, as he perceived. He got on there and apologized, and basically
did the human thing.
The human thing to keep his job, obviously. And Don is hurt after 30 years of it. So anyway, a lot of Canadian issues. before we get out of here now, we had Cam Neely on the show last week. We encourage people to go back and listen if you haven't.
Very appropriate considering what we talked about with the Bruins passing too much and Cam Neely talking about being selfish when you pass.
And the Krug stuff. Now on the Greg Hill Show, Cam was on the next day and would not answer a direct question about Krug. He said, I defer to Don Sweeney on that. But didn't you come away from our conversation with Cam thinking, oh boy, they're a little leery about signing Krug.
Yes,
I mean,
absolutely.
I changed my mind totally after that. I mean, he didn't say it. He was careful.
I think they're leery about going too long with him.
Very much so.
So that doesn't mean he can't stay. It just means he has to understand that
they're looking for like a 5-year deal.
Exactly. I think Torrey has to accept 5 years, which at a pretty good AAV, which would probably be seven times five. You don't want to stay here and win. And challenge for the cup? You want to go somewhere else? I mean, you know, lots of luck to you there. I mean,
but life without him, as Jamie McLennan says, okay, let's picture
that.
He goes.
Exactly. Well,
is Grizzlick enough? Is McAvoy?
It's Grizzlick, it's McAvoy, it's Fakkanainen even. I mean, if the guy takes the right strides, and it means a restructure of the power play. It means, you know, kind of a realignment of things. But they're not going to blow up the cap, and they're not going to, like, I think the parts where we talked about Krug, also the part we didn't talk directly about Krug when we were talking about Lucic and talking about not falling in love with your players and the fact that they fell in love with the Lucics and the Kellys and the Peverleys and got too tied up. You know, they're not going to go in cap jail anymore. They're going to make the hard decisions, I guess. And his his tribute to Belichick, saying that, you know, the guy makes the hard decisions
right.
and cuts ties with players that are, you know, sentimental favorites. It's going to be, you know, our way or the highway, I guess.
And you took a shot at the Red Sox and mentioned the loyalty coming back to bite you with Steve Pearce.
Steve Pearce has the same batting average as me. He gets to take a shot at him, you know.
All right, so interesting week coming up with the back-to-backs, Capitals and the Leafs. By the time we talk to you next week, you want to peek ahead? We've got some couple interesting guests lined up in the hopper through you. I'm looking forward to that. Do you want to reveal those?
No, we'll let people keep guessing. Yeah, sure.
Okay. So by the time we talk to you next week, they have a Jersey game, so we'll be on after the trip to Jersey, which is the least interesting of the three games that will happen.
Well, you never know with the Bruins. I mean, they made it an interesting game with Ottawa, so they could make an interesting game with New Jersey.
Good point. All right, check out Calman's delicious stories at WEI.com, and, of course, all the podcasts you can handle now at the Skate Pod. And we will talk to you next week.